AI is without doubt going to influence how we do our jobs in the future, and it has the potential to do better for our patients. We go into medicine to help people. We go into medicine to help patients. And so if I think about my younger self entering the field of medicine, I should ask myself the same question that you should always ask when you're entering medicine. What would help me be the best doctor that I can be? And I think that the answer to that is to understand this incredibly rapidly evolving technology that is AI.
Hello and welcome back to Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. I'm your host, Christian Terbisch. I'm a professor of operations, information and decision and co-director of the Mac Institute of Information Management. It's our goal to cut through the noise, to deliver actionable insights for business leaders by combining cutting-edge research with real-world case studies. Things are moving fast, so let's dive right in. On today's episode, we are taking a deep dive into a profession that has witnessed its fair share of AI applications, and that is radiology. Medical imaging through x-rays, MRIs, CT scans, that is something that as patients, we are all very familiar with. And as you might recall, we kicked off the season with an interview I had with the head of AI at GE Healthcare, a major provider of imaging equipment and technology. So in this episode, I want to loop back and talk with somebody who's actually using this technology. For today's conversation, I'm excited to introduce Dr. Pari Pantari Pandey. Pari is the chair of the Department of Radiology at Penn Medicine. Pari is a renowned physician and scientist. As a chair of the oldest radiology department in the nation, she also manages over 100 faculty and a major clinical operation. Welcome, Pari.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Pari, what skills make for a great radiologist?
I think a lot of people think that the principal skill for being a great radiologist is being able to look at a picture and to find a finding. And, you know, it's interesting because you do need to do that as a radiologist. But I actually think that what makes for a great radiologist is the ability to synthesize lots of different findings you see with a greater context of medicine. And that is the disease or the condition, that is the symptom that the patient's experiencing, that is the team that is caring for that patient. And that's the humanity of having the privilege of being involved in the care of other human beings.
Fascinating. I think that's going to give us a great background when we think about AI in a moment. But before we get there, I want to understand, what does it take? How does the training look like to become a radiologist?
Today in radiology, what happens in the U.S. is as follows. You go to medical school and then you would, you know, decide ideally in medical school that you would want to move forward with a career in radiology. Then you would have to do an internship. It can either be a mix of things in medicine and surgery. And then you do 4 years of radiology. And then many people will do a year or even 2 years sometimes after that to do a subspecialty. So the 4 years of radiology gives you broad training. And then the extra year gives you training in your subspecialty. So my subspecialty is abdominal imaging. So I did extra time in abdominal imaging afterwards.
Yeah, I recently got an x-ray of my left ankle. Now, most of our listeners will have experienced something similar, but we see this process from the patient's perspective. What happens behind the curtain? Could you walk us through how the radiologist who likely read my ankle x-ray, how they experience the process?
In today's world, once you have the x-ray taken, it would be transmitted digitally to a PACS machine. And so the radiologist would have the ability to, within that digital framework, look at all of the views in magnification if needed, and then issue a report. The report is in a dictation system, which automatically pulls up type of study that the x-ray was to make the radiologist a little more efficient. And then the radiologist will dictate the findings, and then that is transmitted to your medical record.
Now, as an operations specialist and as a fan of Taylorism, I'm kind of curious about the time and motion study here. How long does it take you to read an image for the x-ray of an ankle tear or a simple x-ray? Is this 30 seconds? Is this 30 minutes?
So an x-ray wouldn't be 30 minutes. Depending on the complexity of the x-ray, it should be no more than a few minutes. If you're in a fast-paced, you know, environment where you're reading x-ray after x-ray after x-ray and you've locked in to that process, then you are going to be able to have everything set up with efficiency, just like you do whenever you're doing a task repetitively many, many times. Sometimes something will take you out of that, and that could be the patient's medical history is not very straightforward, and you'll need to look back into the medical record, and you'll need to understand a little bit more about what's going on with that patient. Or you may need to speak to a physician or the technologist who acquired the x-ray. So there's some variability there, but an x-ray, it should be fairly fast.
And do you have like a standard routine that you read the history first and then you look at the image, or do you look at the image and then you read the history to understand what you should look for? How should I imagine that part?
People do it differently. And I think that both are important and people do it in different orders. Some people prefer one way or another. In addition to that, people have what's called search patterns. And that perhaps is the most important part of the routine. And that is what ensures that you don't miss something when you're looking at the film, and that you specifically look at each of the parts of the study that are important to the study at one time. And so there's the history and the film, but I think probably more important to radiologists is to have that entire search pattern sort of down as they go through studies. For example, in an abdominal CT scan, you want to make sure you look at the lung bases. You want to make sure you look at the bones. Even if the problem is the liver, you want to make sure that you do all of these things systematically.
I see. And then finally, tell me about writing the report. Is this something that I dictate? Is this something where I press Control F to get like a text module plugged in? Is this something that is happening through Gen AI?
The way that most people are doing this now is through voice recognition. We're essentially speaking and then our words appear on the screen. On a given CT scan, there are headings such as liver or lungs. And as you're dictating, you can go between those fields and input what you think is important. There's also some default language, depending on how a department has it set up. There's also what's called macros. So you can create a macro or a phrase that you use. So somebody might say macro normal gallbladder, and then the things that you would want to say pertaining to what is a normal gallbladder would appear in the report. So there's some efficiencies there, but otherwise it is not typing, it is voice dictation, and it is usually on a template. So you're not just freely dictating everything.
Is the reading itself, is there like a pre-reading? Say you're looking at the mammography process. Is there like an automated reading either in parallel or before the radiologist reads the image of the breast and is already looking for cancer? Or is this the image reading human only? How does technology support this process?
When I think of the process of having an image created and then having it interpreted, I think of technology supporting us in many ways. And I think of AI. So I'll give you a few examples as to how AI is helping us today and how it might help us in the future. So one thing that many hospitals or systems are doing already, and I'll shift here to MR for a second, because I think it provides a unique example, is AI is being used to shorten exams. You know, before when you got an MRI, you would have a certain amount of data that would be collected. Now we're collecting a little bit less. And we can do that because AI allows us to essentially predict what the rest of the data would be. It's more efficient, but most importantly, I think for many patients, they would prefer a much shorter MRI exam. Now think about the interpretation. There are products that are being used within organizations broadly in medicine that allow us to improve our interpretation of different imaging findings that allow you to do things like detect a bleed in a brain or detect a stroke. And when you can detect those things faster and without a human looking at them first, they can be brought to the attention of humans. That's one way that we use AI. I think that down the line in the future, the opportunity for AI is one that invokes foundational models. And a foundational model is essentially a more sophisticated AI model. And the vision that you can create with a foundational model is one that, I will borrow from a colleague in my department here, Tessa Cook, who's the vice chair of practice transformation at Penn in radiology. And she talks about the use of a foundational model to do what's called agentic AI. And that is to have essentially a work group or a family of bots that works with the radiologist and the healthcare team to make sure that a patient can accurately get an order placed for an exam, get that exam scheduled in the place that's the best place for that patient and ensures that the right equipment is available, ensures that the patient doesn't have an allergy to the dye that's going to be used, or if they do, make sure that the patient has pre-medications for that, plans the patient's exam, make sure that the exam is done correctly with the right technology and the right sequences. And then once that's actually done, meaning the image is acquired, the results can also be sent to the radiologist and analyzed in a way that using AI not only allows the radiologist to take a look at the scan as we do today, but also provides the radiologist with extra information, some element of interpretation of things that we don't actually do necessarily today, data that we don't necessarily have today at our fingertips that's only available through the analysis that the AI does. And then that result will actually be used by this, again, family of bots to try to correlate with the medical record and the patient's history and understand what's best to do next for the patient. I think that if we're focused in defining the paths in which we can use them properly, it will actually have the potential to change the way that we work substantially.
I know that from prior discussions that you and I had, there's currently a very significant labor shortage.
Yes.
In radiology. Why is this?
That's the thing that keeps me up at night, as you and I have spoke about, Christian, all the time. The number of people, the residents, the trainees that go into radiology hasn't increased a lot in the past two decades. The population of people who require imaging has increased substantially, and we expect it'll continue to increase substantially. The number of people who are 65 and older who have the greatest needs for healthcare is growing. And so we know that the demand exceeds the supply today, and we know that that challenge is only going to get worse. That's the thing that keeps me up at night. I think that mathematically, there are a few different things that we can do, but ultimately, figuring this problem out is going to be one of the critical things we have to get to the other side of, not only in radiology, but I think in healthcare more broadly, ultimately.
What I find fascinating about that is as you mentioned, it's math, right? There's labor shortage has to do with capacity and demand. Capacity we can boost a little bit. I mean, with AI, you mentioned the vision of the team of bots working on it. But I think that I like what you're observing is we are imaging more than 10 years ago, right? And so I think demand is increasing, and as you just so nicely articulated a moment ago, once we have these agents, we'll be imaging even more, right? And so it seems to me, even if we have a productivity boost, we are likely going to spend a big chunk of that in just having more images.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. The other side of it that we don't talk about quite as much is, where are there opportunities where we're imaging now where we could potentially not either have to image in the same way today, or whether we're overutilizing imaging today, you know, or whether some of our imaging tests ultimately could be replaced by blood tests or so forth. And I think that to some extent, that'll be both, we have to be careful about overutilization because of this capacity problem. And I think that there will be, you know, as there always are in medicine, there will be other areas of evolution and progress in diagnostic medicine that'll prevent us from doing tests that we do today in imaging. It's hard for me to imagine that this momentum isn't going to, it might be curbed to some degree, but it won't be curbed to a degree that will prevent me from staying up at night worrying about this.
Is imaging maybe sometimes too easy for the physician, in the sense that, do you sometimes read images and you go like, why the hell did the doctor order that image? It's just so obvious what's going on here.
You know, I try not to do that. I'm genuine and honest in that. One thing about medicine that I think is incredibly important to ground oneself in is that you work in teams, and the goal of the team is putting the patient in the center. If you view it through that lens, it's like working in any other kind of team, whatever industry you're in. And so in radiology, perhaps the difference is, in academic medical centers, we know our teams pretty well. So we actually, in tertiary and quaternary centers, which have people who've been working together for a long time and have multiple conferences together to identify the care needs of complex patients, you have that advantage of knowing your team. But in radiology, and especially as healthcare really just frankly grows as a field, you're not going to know everybody as well. And so your team, and defined in that way, may be people that you don't know, but you have to trust that they're doing their best. So I very much try not to do what you're saying. I think it's an important perspective.
In many AI applications in other industries, we see that the productivity boosts, the productivity gains is bigger for the less experienced, the lower productivity workers. Is that plausible in radiology as well?
Yeah, I think that that's going to likely be the case. You know, I talked about a few different types of AI a few minutes ago, and one of the challenges in the implementation and dissemination of the tools where you're looking to find specific findings, like a fracture or a lung nodule. One of the challenges with those is when you are in the business of doing that all the time and you've become very expert at that, having a tool compete with you, the tool might not do much better than you. However, if you're somebody, for example, who's not subspecialized in a particular area of the body, then it may be performing better for you than the person who's a subspecialist. And so for those reasons, I think you're right. And I think that there's more of an opportunity there. But I also think conversely, that's the reason why for many expert radiologists, some of the AI tools that have come out to date, they have added time without being very helpful from a test performance standpoint.
Interesting. I'm just thinking about the stress and the psychology of somebody reading images all day. So say I'm reading 60 cases a day, and right now 50% are easy and 50% are hard. Now my team of AI bots is handling a lot of the 30 easy cases. And so as a radiologist, I'm now stuck with only hard cases all day long. Do you think since the easy cases will go to our bots first, would the AI make the radiology job more stressful because what is left for the expert is all the hard stuff?
That is a really tough question. I think the answer to that depends on a few things. It depends on what is the AI doing for those difficult cases. In the vision that I shared with you earlier, there's a potential there for AI to help a lot with the more complicated cases. Now, it's not going to be, for example, the AI isn't going to say in five different ways that the case is normal. That's obviously, you know, cognitively much easier than a case where there's many, many abnormal findings. But even if, you know, even if there are a lot of abnormalities, the question is, I think, you know, at a human level, what are you operationally doing with that? Are all the measurements made and you're trying to understand whether the disease has progressed or whether what you're seeing is due to a treatment effect? That kind of determination, one person might say, well, that's complexity, but that is also what motivates us to try to do the best for our patients. That's sort of at the heart of what we're interested in doing for people. That's why we went into the field. So if I read a series of cases where I wasn't actually adding value, that wouldn't be cognitively great either. So that's one perspective I would share. The other perspective is it depends on the amount of work that you ask an individual to do. So if you ask an individual to do exactly the same amount of work where, say, in the extreme, in one case, it's very, very easy. In the other case, it's very, very hard. Each case that's hard takes 10 times as long as the easy case. Then obviously that's a challenge. But if you right-size the amount of work, I think you can avoid that problem.
Now, if you think about your career, and you mentioned that, again, this AI theme has been a while in the making, you articulated a fascinating vision going forward. What AI-related advice would you give to your younger self? So somebody who is studying medicine or radiology these days, how is this going to play out? What advice would you give somebody who is just entering this field?
I think that AI is without doubt going to influence how we do our jobs in the future, and it has the potential to do better for our patients. We go into medicine to help people. We go into medicine to help patients. And so I think it's important to think about that again as the grounding of what we're trying to do. If I think about my younger self entering the field of medicine, I should ask myself the same question that you should always ask when you're entering medicine. What would help me be the best doctor that I can be? And I think that the answer to that is to understand this incredibly rapidly evolving technology that is AI. You have to understand it well. You have to understand its capabilities and keep up with it. You have to be open to what it can do. You have to be equally, and this is incredibly important, skeptical of where its problems are. And you have to gain an understanding of a lot of the complexities involved in where it can become biased, where it can hallucinate, and understand the best governance processes for those algorithms moving forward, those models moving forwards. That vision that I shared is exciting, but it also has a lot of opportunity to go wrong. And you have to be, you have to have that kind of vigilance. But when you think about it, I mean, I trained in radiology in the early 2000s. And before I trained was probably the period that cross-sectional imaging, CT and MR were beginning to really take hold in medicine. And the people in the organizations who embraced those technologies really pushed those technologies along for greater patient care at a time when people didn't know what they were necessarily, you know, what their potential could be at the very beginning. And so I think it's technology is like that. But there's a huge advantage to being open to something different, while at the same time grounding yourself and recognizing that the excitement is not the technology only. You can be excited about a technology, but in medicine, our job is not to be excited about technology. Our job is to actually care for patients. And I think if you come into the field with that lens, I think you'll do well.
Wow, what a great piece of advice. This has been a fun discussion. I learned a lot about AI and about my ankle today. Pari, thank you so much for joining me on our podcast, Where AI Works.
It was great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
As we are wrapping up today's episode, let's reflect on some of the implications of what Pari taught us today. Even a layperson like me can upload my x-rays and get a reading. One might think that radiologists are really becoming the lift operators of the 21st century. But the opposite seems to be happening. We have a labor shortage in radiology despite a decade of AI. What I take away from this episode is that we really should look at the bigger picture. We want to understand what Clayton Christensen refers to as a job to be done. And that in the case of radiology is more than translating an image into words. There's so much more that Pari taught us about scheduling, about diagnosing, about relating to the patient. The task is just way bigger than it seems. What makes healthcare special is the large cost of failure. There simply is more at stake compared to me asking ChatGPT for a tourist attraction in Paris. And when more is at stake, we are back to the famous human in the loop or human with the loop. This leads to my favorite topic, and that's the workflow design. So the billion-dollar question in radiology is not if AI can do it, but how to leverage AI to improve the productivity of the radiologist and ultimately get healthier patients. So the productivity boost is not as big as one might have predicted. And that gets me to my last point for today, and that is demand. Even if productivity is coming up, the challenge is that we are likely to be consuming more. Do you know anybody in your life who would not want to be 10% healthier? So I wouldn't put my money on the prediction that AI will lead to job losses or cost savings in healthcare anytime soon. Thank you so much for listening. Please follow us so that you don't miss a future episode. And be sure to tune in next time for a special look back at my highlights and biggest lessons from the season of the podcast. You have been listening to Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. I'm Christian Tabish, and on behalf of all of us here at the Wharton School, thank you for listening.